C2PR. Number 16A.
Well, we have come up to the prayer of soul. We have done the tones, but perhaps we can think a little bit more about that prayer of soul, especially in regard to text interpretation. See, I said that I would like really to show you all the angles of text interpretation, what one can do, how to do it. And naturally, this is not always an inspiring talk, but it appeals to the understanding of the student who is, say, also into intellectual abilities, to the abilities really to want to study the text and not read the text, to investigate the subject scientifically and not just in an emotional, sentimental way. And this is not always easy because we have been brought up, no matter if we have been in church or not, we have been brought up in a religious atmosphere with a religious attitude towards God and the universe and man. And so it is not always perhaps easy for the class to go along with me. But still I have a feeling that you did go along with me quite well. And I must thank you for that, because I really went through some weeks of heart, not attacks, but heart. What you say when the heart is, yes, trepidations and so on. I always said when I was in Switzerland, how on earth will I be able to do what I want to do, to show text interpretation? And I think you have taken it up to now very well, and I thank you for that. It wasn't easy for me really to start out with that subject. Thank you. Thank you. Because one knows this is a subject that is usually hard at the beginning, but one also knows that one, if one goes on over days and days, that then little by little things become rather smooth and flowing and easier, until finally, perhaps at the end of the week, you will say to yourself, why did I ever study the textbook or read the textbook differently than I do now? Yes, we were considering soul, the prayer of soul, where we said that the prayer of sinlessness, that's the prayer of soul, is doing what? It's that prayer that is fulfilling the Christ's demand to rebuke sin. So the prayer of soul is that which is willing to rebuke all that is sinful. And we have seen that sin can mean here only one thing, that we do not follow the prayer of mind and spirit, that we are not really hitting that mark which the prayer of mind has brought out, that said, look here, I show you what the nature of God is. And the prayer of spirit said, and that God should be worshipped with all your spiritual qualities. That second prayer was the prayer of spiritual qualities, and that only praying in that line would bring spiritual growth, would bring unfoldment. So now the third subject comes along and says, now don't give in to that order. If you give in to that order, that is sin. And we have to rebuke it and to refute it, so that you go along that rule of soul. So that brings us, as the epitome says, brings us into unity with soul's ability to reform us. It again shows the order very nicely, that we could not start with the third prayer. Usually, religion tells us you are a sinner and you better change and you better reform. And so do your best that you reform yourself. But religion doesn't tell how. They just say, you, do it. How can we know that we have to reform? That means, how do we know that we are on the wrong track? If we start just with soul and say, you are on the wrong track, you have to reform, we would say, well, what is the right track? What, if I'm on the wrong track, tell me what is the right track. Prove to me first that I am on the wrong track. And therefore, we could never start with the third prayer, because it hasn't the preconditions, the prerequisites stated, what is the right track, the order of mind, spirit. So can you see, I talk now about how we can check our findings, how we can really see the logic of reason, of reasoning spiritually, that the third prayer could never be the first prayer. The third prayer could not be the second prayer. Even if the first prayer shows us, mind, that we have to have a desire to see the nature of God as what God is, then the religionist could come along and say, do you see now what God is? So you better reform, you better change. And one would say, but what gives me the strength to change? What is that within me that has the power, the strength, the ability to change? Do I change just because I have to make up my mind to change? Or is there a spiritual nature there that has the strength to withstand a false sense? And so you can see that the second subject first must come in of spirit. That tells us how to reflect that one God. The divine being must be reflected by man. So that Mrs. Eddy gives us those spiritual qualities and says, you use those spiritual qualities, you culture those spiritual qualities, and those spiritual qualities give you strength for the day, she said. So that it isn't your will that is going to change you. It isn't just making up one's mind to change. Can you see, that would be pure metaphysics or pure Old Testament law, thou shalt and thou shalt not. Mrs. Eddy doesn't do that. Mrs. Eddy gives us first in the second prayer the spiritual substance that can change. So before we change, she says, just worship first all those spiritual qualities which you have in you. Those spiritual qualities like consecration, like gratitude for the good you have received, gratitude that God exists. Just have that gratitude and show that gratitude by keeping the commandments. Show that gratitude by constantly entertaining that gratitude. And only that really will be able to awake you in the likeness of God. Then you have something within you on which to rely, from which to draw. You have a spiritual strength within you that you really can approach the third subject of soul to rebuke sin. If we wouldn't have the first and second prayer, we would try to rebuke sin, not knowing what sin really is. We may rebuke the right thing, and we wouldn't have really any inward spiritual power to do that. So can you see, these are always the questions that you can ask yourself. You ask constantly, why this order? And only as we go over this 1,000 times, and another 1,000 times, always in a different way, in every chapter in a different way, but to culture the developing sequence of the subject, be it the main subject or the subtones, it doesn't matter, but constantly to contemplate and consider that order, step by step, little by little, that order becomes our own nature. And that's what is necessary. So that if that order, that creative order, becomes our own nature, we only then are the creation of God. Are we God's creation? Because then within us there is something, there is that law of creativity which works, so to say, automatically, finally, as a reflex image, as a reflex activity, without that we think about it. And so we get into the rhythm of spirit, into the rhythm of the law of creativity. We have seen this prayer of soul, and perhaps we can see again how the subtones even have that flow within themselves, the creative flow, the logical sequence within themselves. What did we see here? Just looking back on those 7 subtones, we could see that rule of soul that wants to reform us goes out from mind. And goes out from mind as the basis of everything, which says there is a law of justice. That law of justice really says that you cannot go around your rule of soul. You cannot go around going along from the first subject to the second subject of spirit. There is a law behind it, and you must jolly well learn and recognize that law, because that law has no discount. You cannot fool it. You cannot sidestep it. You cannot go around it. You really first have to see that sin brings suffering. That's the law. And that sinlessness brings you into your true identity. So that's the law. That cause determines effect, and there is no discount in that law. That's mind. So thought goes further and says, you see, this law applies to both, to the saint and to the sinner. Now she gives the firmament, the distinction in spirit, and says, if you go along the rule of soul and see that is a law which you cannot sidestep, then you will get the fruits. And we had there that everyone gets the fruits of spirit. The sinner gets it, and the saint gets it. Not always in this world, not always right immediately, but at the end he gets it. You cannot go around that law. If we have seen that both the sinner and the saint are under that law of justice, then naturally we say, oh, I don't want to go the way of the sinner, I better go the way of the saint. So soul comes and makes up the mind to stick to that rule through all the difficulties. So you get soul is always that which sticks to mind and spirit, and is perseverant in it, does not deviate from it. You get the real sense of the sinlessness within ourselves. So soul tells us there really to stick to the rule of sinlessness, because that overcomes the works of the devil, as she says. In doing that, we can see that now we have found that rule of soul which brings a correction. That when that rule demonstrates itself, that brings correction. So the point of principle which Mrs. Eddy brings out is that prayer of sinlessness is a prayer of principle, and that principle does not pardon, but that principle demands correction. So we get the proof of it. Principle gives the proof, the demonstration of it, and says, if you go along soul as mind, soul as spirit, and soul as soul, then you have the principle of correction within you. You have the sinless principle, and that corrects the mistake, that does not pardon the mistake. Pardon will not lead us anywhere. And then she says, and this reforms the sinner. You get the demonstration of it in principle. The text doesn't finish there, but goes on to life, to soul as life, and says, but you know, I give you some comfort, because if you feel, well, hell comes on me if I don't go that way, hell comes on me if I don't see the rule, even if I want to see it and I don't see it, and I'm a sinner, and then hell comes on me. So she goes on and says, no, you know, that principle is always life. That principle is always merciful. That principle is always of the nature of grace. That's the tone of life. It always gives to everyone only the good. It gives to everyone this law, or put it this way, this law of principle of correction works in everyone. No matter if he seeks truth or if he does not seek truth, just the same, that mercy is impartial. That was a side note there, which says that principle works in two ways, but it works always. It works either to bring you forward through suffering or through understanding. So that even suffering is a means to bring us forward. Suffering and pain here is not depicted as something that rolls us right down into the bottom of hell, and there you stay and are fried. And there you are. But that the law of grace always says, I have the means, without that you seek it or don't, if you seek it or not seek it, to bring you to salvation. It is either through the way, the method, life, of suffering, or the method of understanding. And so it goes on and says, all right, if you go the way of understanding, what are you going to do? Then we get the tone of truth and say, then your understanding must stick to the truth and therefore relinquish your material sense of its claim. You stick sinlessly to the truth. By sticking to the truth, material sense can no more mislead you. The temptation leaves you. And in this way, you are freed from the effects of the claims of material sense. And we feel that this is now giving us the health and the demonstration of overcoming sin, sickness, and death. But if that is overcome, if in truth we overcome material sense by overcoming the claim of material sense, and by overcoming the claim of material sense, it overcomes the effect, the works of the devil. You see, the actual sin, sickness, and death, then within you is only spiritual sense left. That's the tone of love, where it says that really brings you to that point of Christian sentiment. It frees you from all the ecstasy and emotional sense and physical sense that bring about ecstasy and so on, and you quiet down within yourself, and in place of that material sense, the spiritual sense takes hold of you, and that brings about what she calls there the Christian sentiment. Well, the Christian sentiment is naturally the sinlessness of soul. So, at the beginning of the text, what was at the beginning of the text? It was going out right from sorrow for wrongdoing is but one step to reform and so on. It goes out from sorrow, but it ends with Christian sentiment. It's really the soul sense in its highest tonality that you say something now is within me. An atmosphere now is within me that only responds to spiritual sense and no more to material sense. And so we have the climax of it. Can you see that science always shows the method how to go about a situation? Religion and metaphysics usually don't show a method. They demand something. They say, you must reform. They say, you are a sinner and you better change. And leave the sinner to struggle with that demand, with that Old Testament, that Mosaic demand, thou shalt. And doesn't give him a method. Science, as in the textbook, takes up all those questions too that religion takes up, especially here in prayer, but always shows the method to do it, how you arrive at that, and always an ordered method. And that method is always the order which we find in the text. Do you see that science is a savior? That science has within itself a Christ, a Savior. That's why it is the Christ science or Christian science. Well, I said, when we did mind already, I said that if one knows the subject and ponders it and begins to feel the touch of it, that then in pondering this, all various questions may pop up regarding that subject, not about something else. You have to be careful that you are not going away from the straight and narrow path of life. For instance, the thought can come up, well, she speaks here a lot about sin and the temptation, about Satan and the devil and diabolism and all that kind of thought. And you perhaps say to yourself, well, what then is actually that temptation, that devil tempting me? What are the temptations? What are the sinful arguments that come up and talk to me? And so you can perhaps take again those seven subtones and say, what does every subtone suggest? What kind of temptation does every subject tempt us? And so we can go back to the text. And as we know the text a little bit, I can just talk about it and you will remember it at once. But in the subtone of mind, She would say, well, the temptation is that we don't believe in that law of justice. You know, there is a lot of speculation within us that tries to speculate with God and say, well, you know, perhaps I can really influence God that he forgives me without that I change, without that I pay the uttermost farthing. Perhaps there is a way around it. And so the very first temptation that comes to us is that we don't believe that this is a law, that there is a law that we have to pay the uttermost farthing. And we say, somehow I will get away with it. She goes on to spirit and says, well, what is there the temptation? And there the temptation is very big, because it says that the sinner may not get its fruit right away, and that the saint also may not get his fruit right away. Not perhaps in this world, but only looking to the end. So the temptation is and says, well, if the sinner doesn't get his reward right away, his fruits right away, so why should I care? Why don't I go the way of the sinner if it doesn't really hit me hard and fast right away? Let's take the chance to go along the old way. The fruits will not come about right away, so I take a chance. Or we come to the subtone of soul, and there we have seen that the religionist thinks that he can get away through confessions, through the confessional, instead of really correcting himself. So he says, oh, you know, if things will then go wrong, I go and confess it. And then I'm free again, I come out from the confessional all happy and free and jolly, say, oh, that's done with. So what next? So she talks about that the confessional is actually not the substitute for the law, for the rule of soul. Or in principle, the temptation is there what? That it says, I can ask pardon. God is so good that if I ask him nicely and gently, he certainly can't refuse my begging, and he will pardon me. Whereas the text says, no, principle doesn't pardon. It demands correction. But that's a great temptation, that we can ask God for pardon.